Hello, everyone.
Hello.
On Zoom. This strange way of coming together, but it's lovely to see all your faces. And thank you very much, Nick, for your beautiful reading. I want to be out with spray in my face, salt air through the hair after hearing that. Thank you. And thank you to Paul and Rosie, as ever, for your good work here and for the invitation. And I hope next time it can be in Cork. I'm going to read a few poems that toggle between the West of Ireland and the US. As you heard, Paterson is where I'm from. And I haven't lived in the US for over 20 years, but I spent a little bit of time there in the last few years. So there's a poem set there as well that I'll read. But the first poem I'm going to read is set in Sligo, where I live. And it mentions Inishmurry. I was wondering if Mick was going to mention Inishmurry, another beautiful monastic island, one of my favorite places in the world.
It's a lovely, absolutely lovely place. Yeah.
Isn't it a beautiful place?
Yeah, amazing.
About 10 kilometers due west of where I am now. So this poem is set in the dunes of Sligo. I'm told that Sligach refers to Shelley or shells, the Irish for Sligo. And it's set in the Shelley Valley, these big dunes in Strandhill. And the poem is about a mother and a daughter. And the daughter is at that tender teenage age where the mother has to learn to tread more carefully in what she says and doesn't say. And one thing that I heard about one of the first actions that a mother does with her daughter when she hasn't seen her in a while is she'll touch her hair, often brushing the hair out of her face. And in the poem, there's a reference to that, how the mother wants to, when she sees her daughter, do that, but she resists. And I suppose the poem is about that time of life in a mother's life and a daughter's life where a mother has to really let go. And the poem also is something about language acquisition. It's called Marum, you know, the grass that grows in the dunes. And there's a play in there with the M sound and the first sounds that children make, the mama sound, that bilabial first sound that also sounds like marum. And there's a metaphor in there about motherhood. Marum. Place a cloth lightly over the bowl of water and flour. Let stand for a day or more. I had tried this once before many years ago with no success at all. At that time, I knew nothing about wild beasts and how they work. Fierce, fierce Maeve flinging rocks from Knocknarea, the Sligo suburbs strewn. We're from a long line of Queen Maeves, her graves above us. Pass by way of Barnaribbon, swim from Ireland proper in salt and cold and bladder rack. Overtake the purple man of war, cycling his tangled streaming body to Inishmurry, flaring in deep water like a coin. Such talky, sibilant surf, relentless Morse code modem shriek, a skylark. Dry marum tips breezily clack, jumping flashes, natterjack toads, a crosshatch of marum grass, red fescue, and marsh helleborine. Ceaseless info stream of Inishmurry, echoes Orla's email. Oh God, the sea. Marum. A word we love, marum, silver point on dune. In midden-rich Shelley Valley, we yell, Marum, ampersand, gossamer. Words are jellies, our mouths warm. Words are ice flows melting steadily. We go out on them anyhow. Isn't weird a weird word when you really think about it? In high sun, Marum casts scythes, such cuts. You are falling in half moons, dune ladder, daughter. Fringe sickle snagging mascarad lashes, I adjust only mentally. Red dots droppered, black nail varnish, wings of moths we trapped last May on Inishmurray. Marum, sea mirror. Mar Hullum, grace grass. Marum, early word. Ever binding loose sands with tough rhizomes. One of the things that I actually like about reading on Zoom is I can, the page is closer to you as the audience, and I can do things like show that after the poem ends, there are marks on the page that go across the next pages as well in the book. I don't know if the light will show this. This is a kind of centerfold that has just very scattered forward, or not forward slashes, but straight up and down slashes that are done, you know, on the keyboard, but they mimic the way that marum grass can scatter across a dune. And a lot of the work that I do really sits on the edge between the verbal and the visual. That's why I'm so interested in making films from some of the poems. And in the next poem that I'm going to read, there's also a little bit of a play on, it's not a play, but it's the poem plays around with the fact that it's a written thing as well as a spoken thing. And so the poem that I'm going to read next is called Resting on the Ground with My Love in the Rattlesnake Habitat. And it takes place in the US, in New Mexico, in the desert. And being in the US after being away from the US for nearly 20 years was really difficult. The inequalities that were very apparent to me when I was growing up in the US were even more apparent after having been away for 20 years. It was very apparent, especially where I was in New Mexico, the inequalities among the haves and the have-nots, and also the difficulty of living as someone making art. Just the difficulty of having no social safety net, of health insurance being very expensive. And so that was a lot on my mind when I was writing this poem. Donald Trump had also recently been elected. And so there's, the poem is set in the desert, but it's a desert not only of a landscape kind, but another kind of desert, kind of a desert, what would I say? A desert of people being very obsessed with making money and of being obsessed with work. And what else do I need to say about this poem? Oh yeah, I wrote this to show you. The poem talks about Sylvia Plath's witch elms. So spelled like that, witch, W-Y-C-H. But then there's a play on just the other word that we use, witch, W-H-I-C-H. It also has the word Abiquiu, which is the place in New Mexico where Georgia O'Keeffe lived. And it mentions Abiquiu, and then it mentions the word Q, like Americans would say, lining up in a queue. And then the last part I wanted to show you is the poem mentions the word work, but it crosses that word out three times like this. And it's really hard when you're reading a poem to show a word that's crossed out. The poem, and so often when I'm reading it in public, I'll say work, work, work. But because I can show you up close on Zoom, I thought I would do that. So anyway, this is resting on the ground with my love in the rattlesnake habitat. And this is from Poetry Chicago in last year's, 2 years ago, January 2018. She pronounces Chama, the name of the milky green river, with a richness in the CH I cannot muster, puts a hard D on the end of her ands, and. Like the river, she is asking to be endless and shifting, to stream. I'd scouted the knoll of oaks for rattlers, being beyond the bounds of coverage, having no means to learn their habits. So I lay down with her on the ground, their ground, and I willed to forget the cares of my later in life job search. Job, which is also Job, a man in the Bible, which is a book. The oaks of the knoll were leaning into the chama like girls washing their hair in basins. I thought of E.B. shampooing Lota, of Frost's birches, of Plath's witch elms, which I'd like to have Googled. Did snakes favor oak knolls? Did Georgia O'Keeffe worry about health insurance costs in Abiquiu? And beside me, my love, streaming, her poodles distantly nosing the chamisa. Standards. I thought I had them. Put art at the front of the queue, which is different from queue. And now this. Biblical, the proportions of this breaking back into a country I'd locked myself out of phase. Was it scenic? I liked the pachysandra, branches of oak taking all that space from the sky. But then everybody disappeared into their offices. Three times I wrote, work, 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 when woke was what I wanted to write. Miniature is the acorn I fingered in the soft flower sack pocket of my jeans. Acorn smaller than East Coast or indeed Irish oak varieties, which she handed me, and how hungrily I pocketed its little body. I'm going to read two short pieces and then I'll finish up from this book, Una, which came out a few months ago from Lilliput. And Una is a hybrid book of verse and prose. It's called, they're calling it a novel. It's a novel in some respects. I might say more a novel in essays. And it tracks the development of an artist called Una. And it also tracks her coming out of an early grief. And one of the things that I decided to do when I was writing the book is I wrote the book without using the letter O in the novel. Some people call this an ulipo, constraint, though I've never, when I was writing the book, I was never thinking about Lupo. Kind of after the fact, a lot of people have been asking me about that. I wrote the book with no O because the title character, Una, is missing something in herself, and the book is tracking her coming to find parts of herself through making art. And I suppose it's a book about how art making can bring a person back to her senses. And part of this this coming back to her senses for Una is living in a community in the west of Ireland that she lives in, and being on the coast of the west of Ireland. So I thought I'd read two pieces at the end of the book, which are to do with, one to do with Inish Murray, the island, and the other to do with swimming, which is something that is throughout the book. So not on the deck of a boat, but in the water itself. So anyway, this is the first part, chapter 93. The island flares in the sunlit sea like a silver penny adrift. Strida, where the waves are turbulent, where the Spanish Armada sank, where its wrecked fleet is still interred in the beach, in the nearest mainland bit, but that is still 7 kilometers distant. Inish Murray is far, flat, discreet, stranded, an ascetic's island. At my life's end, my ashes will be scattered there. I will then infiltrate it entirely. I'd get there by swimming if I were able, but its distance impedes my desire. Instead, I bring my friend and her friend and their girls. We take a fishing cruiser captained by Olton. I wield as large a drawing tablet as I can manage. It frequently catches the ample wind, nearly taking me with it. Pretending I am a sail and delighting in partially depicting a sailing vessel, I name all the rigs I can. Square rigger, brig, bark, barkentine, caravel, clipper, neff. The nautical terms have a tasty, chewy feel when said. Luff, baggy wrinkle, cleat, clue lines, furl, jib, leech, spinnaker, mainsail, mainsheet. My drawing tablet come sail is handmade. Reeves BFK printmaking paper sheets, the best paper there is. I fastened them myself with mercerized twine. Pencils and charred vine in a sack in my parka. Gummy rubber, all that's needed. The next part here is also a crossed out part. So I'll read it, but it's crossed out. The annals tell us Inish Murray was settled by ascetics in the 6th century. They lived there until the 12th century. Within the castle is their church, the Temple Natin, a beehive hut, a kitchen building, sleeping chambers, and many altars, lacta with their cursing blessing devices. The castle's walls are high and thick, which tells that the Vikings attacked and pillaged the island. The raids began in the 9th century, and it may be what made them leave eventually. Halt. That may be true, yet I repudiate the Baedeker style. Draw nearer the landing place, Clashy Beg, a name that is a little bit menacing. Olton glides the craft in, then abruptly reverses the engine. With the running tide, the yawl is steady, and I jump, clear the gap, help the rest debark, and wave at Olton. He's away fishing until sunset. Feel the island beneath my feet, its sheer reliability amid the agitated sea. First seen thing after the landing's flat flags, hairballs spat up by the hunting birds that arrive at Inish Murray in the night. Whispery thin pencil lines in a skein like attenuated sheep's fleece caught in wind and whipped by the wind secured in that net. Fish and rabbit skeletal remains, tiny curved sharp crab claw pincer, lacy fish ribs, rabbit ulna, felted fur, what that bird's gullet didn't digest, it threw up. There are hairballs everywhere. The birds leave their nests at Lissadel in the night and hunt the island rabbits and fly back at dawn. Rabbits and birds are Inishmurry's inhabitants. Gulls, terns, kittiwakes, puffins perhaps. There are incredible intact altars with their carvings, beehive huts. The distance that Ben Bulbin is staggering. The last families that inhabited Inishmurry left with their sheep and cattle in their sea crafts in 1948. I saw the purplest jellyfish in the little inlet there ever. Mackerel flash their sharp silver and black stripes like underwater gangsters in knife fights in Clashy Beg. We saw the girls climbing the nunnery's walls. They clambered up, held themselves high and erect, became church pinnacles. We didn't dare yell at them because they were statuesque and maybe predicted a new era in Ireland. We wanted that. Inishmurry beliefs. There is a little chapel there and it can never be filled up. There are separate male and female burial places. If a dead man is buried in the female graveyard, the next day the remains will have been exhumed. There are altars scattered in many places. The altar near the chapel has many spherical lithics and their number never adds up as the same number twice. Try tallying them up, then try again. The numbers will always be different. Turning the lithics can create cursings and blessings. The sea between the island and the mainland is generally heavy. If an islander is sick, they take island well water and sprinkle it in the sea, and it immediately calms until a wherry can bring a medic, and at times a priest, and the sick islander can be treated. When the wherry has island returned after bringing the medic back, the sea gets turbulent again immediately. Inishmurry is an ascetic island. I shun the chaste life. I thrive in it. And the last bit I'll read is the last chapter of Una, and it's one paragraph. Chapter 99. Later in the year, say late May, early June, I'm blessedly acclimatized. Swimming isn't survival these days, it's retrieval. Skipping the strand, ever sharp shell watchful, I meet the sea at ankle height, run at the breakers and dive, wave after wave, thundering thin green glass Atlantic sheets, I shatter with my arms in a V. Instant child. Thrill, thrilling, thrilled. Jumping, twirling, messing. Laughing, screeching, spluttering, gasping. Falling backwards in an X. Bum scraping sand, sandbagging my swimsuit. Tide dragging me this way and that. I let it. Hand standing in sand and getting upended by currents, gulping salt water, trailing seaweed, bracelets, necklets, anklets, belts, stepping lightly, crab aware, little pinchers, then treading water, paddling arms and legs, all underwater but my masked eyes, which scan the strand, nearly empty, a few walkers with canines. Ben Bulbin rising behind, furred with green, mist-hatted. Water cradles, busts, edges, spreads me Atlantically, Japanly, Indianly, Arcticly, Lacadivically, Mediterraneanly, Baltically, tranquillitily, Chileanly, Bengali, blackly, Adriatically, redly, Sargassily, Barentsly, Tyrrhenianly, deadly, Caspianly, Antarcticly, Tasmanianly, Pacifically, Fundily, Caribbeanly, Campechially, Biscayly, Celtically, Ligurianly, Galilee. Thanks very much.